100,000 myriad kelpas. Now we can see and hear, we can remember and accept it. I've got it to make the Buddha true, one with myself.
Namaste the Buddha, Namaste the Dharma, Namaste the Sangha. Spiritual training that is embodied in our tradition which is a tradition passed from heart to heart within the master-disciple relationship wider world insofar as it can be both through example and through various forms of teaching that are what you might call more intentional teachings. Anyway, this way of training has its temporal origin in the life of any individual in acceptance of the Buddha's first noble truth. Of course, when the Buddha himself found this first noble truth, he didn't think, oh, this is the first of the four noble truths. Instead, he just realized that there's no way that living beings can live without having to experience suffering. Therefore, suffering is inherent in our existence. And of course, we all know the story of how he went looking for the answer to this problem. If suffering is inherent in the very nature of existence, none of us can avoid it. And when it's going to have to do something about the very process of birth and death itself at its very root. The teaching of previous existences was already in existence at the time of the Buddha. And the view that was taken philosophy that through which people tried to understand the nature of our existence was that this body is, and all bodies are subject to birth and death in a continuous cycle or a continuous stream. Founded on karma. And that as it were imprisoned in this body is the true self or the Atman, which in order to be freed from the suffering associated with this body has to be liberated to return to Brahma, the world soul, the universal soul, universal truth. And this, the ascetics that Buddha joined in his first years of attempting a religious practice, took the view that the desires of the body, since desire basically perpetuates the round of birth and death, the desires of the body have to be conquered. And only when the Atman is freed from the illusion of its identity with the body and its desires can it be liberated to return to the world soul fully at the time of death. So the focus of the training of the first years of the Buddha's religious life after he left home was an ascetic focus in which he tried to conquer the body, and apparently he became so adept at this that he himself had disciples. It's only when he came to the point where his abuse of the body had gone so far that he was near death that he got the bright idea of actually starting to take better care of his body. That he was destroying the vehicle of training in the process, and there had to be something wrong with that. The first big I could be wrong in the history of Buddhism. So by taking nourishment and giving up the ascetic practice, he not only alienated the people who were looking to him as an example, but he also brought about a genuine spiritual understanding. An understanding based in all acceptance, not in the duality of a true self versus an imprisoning, unclean body. the teaching of no self, that nowadays when people hear this, or anatman, no atman, is so often interpreted in a somewhat psychological way. It has nothing to do with modern psychology at all, with any psychological view of things. It's very simple. There isn't this atman that is separate from material existence. He never found it. Therefore, if there is a true self, it must embrace this worldly existence, material existence, not be apart from it. And as the Mahaparinirvana Sutra says, the genuine realization of no self, anatman, does in fact bring one to realization of the true self. It's the same thing. That which we call Buddha nature. Asceticism seems to be an error that people with a genuine contemplative bent fall into very easily. But as the Buddha said, it is actually as ignoble and unhelpful as plain old worldly indulgence. It is true that in order for the problem of suffering to be completely resolved, the problem of continual rebirth must itself be resolved. Something must be done about the course taken by the stream of karma. Living as we do in the present, whether we're always aware of this or not, there's very little we can do about what has happened in the past. Actually, there's nothing we can do about what has happened in the past. It's taken place and it no longer exists. We can, however, in the present moment, do something about the future course of karma. Is that future course going to be a course of merit or a course of the increasing and perpetuating of misery? Is that future course going to lead to the resolution of the karmically inherited pain and confusion, the healing of the ancient karmic wounds? Or is it going to continue to increase them and complicate what is already for each of us a sufficiently complex cable made up of strands of greed, hate, and delusion, and, by the way, strands of merit. There's a principle that every person who undertakes a genuine contemplative practice should know, ideally, right at the beginning. And that principle can be expressed very simply as, there is no external solution to the problem of suffering, because the roots of suffering lie in spiritual causes, not in material causes. Therefore, it is a spiritual transformation that is the fundamental need for each of us. A spiritual realignment. A spiritual harmonization. A spiritual conversion or transformation. This spiritual reharmonization or conversion is itself the greatest mystery of the spiritual life. And while the Master and myself and others speak of it constantly, speaking for myself alone, I can only say that I don't believe I could ever pretend to even begin to understand it, really. When it comes to recognize certain signs or indicators along the way, one certainly experiences directly aspects of the process in consciousness, one becomes conscious of them, and at the same time it's going on at such a deep level and in so many complex and subtle ways that is something in the end that one simply wonders at, and something one has to always have faith in. From the point of view of this conversion process, this reharmonizing with our true nature, this transformation of greed, hate, and delusion into compassion, love, and wisdom, from that point of view, all of the confusion and pain, all the greed, hate, and delusion themselves are the raw material of enlightenment. They are the clay that with the Eternal's help and sincere training can be reshaped from anguished and grotesque forms into the forms of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Therefore, the world in which we live, with all of its manifest miseries and all of its manifest beauties, for that matter, is simply not at fault. That in our world of samsara, which is so pained and so confused, and which so often takes such horrific forms, which sometimes takes such horrific forms, is nonetheless from a deeper point of view than the point of view that only sees that misery. It is still the raw material of enlightenment. And all of the spiritual need that manifests in so many raw ways, painful ways, will one day get the help that it longs for. And the process of rebirth ensures that this is the case. Therefore, the process of rebirth to which the Buddha sought the cessation is itself a manifestation of compassion. And in this seeming paradox lies the origin of what is called Mahayana Buddhism. The Mahayana point of view is that the understanding of this was known to the Buddha, but that he could not talk about it as fully as he would have liked. And so communicated it more secretly. To a few individuals. If we suffer, life is not at fault. If we suffer, there's something we can do about the spiritual roots of suffering. No one, in the end, can begin and continue to do a genuinely contemplative practice unless that individual has truly penetrated the teaching of the First Noble Truth. Otherwise, one will always pop back to trying to solve the problem of suffering by external means, which is the way of the world. And that will only in the end perpetuate suffering. At the same time, those who attempt a contemplative practice and try to somehow use the will to cut off the process of birth and death will also only in the end perpetuate suffering. The middle path shown by the Buddha is the path of all acceptance. An embracing of the suffering an embracing of the cause, an embracing of samsara. And a positive acceptance of the responsibility of training that stubborn and intransigent karma and helping it find its way back to the eternal. Helping the karmic jangles find their resolution.